Welcome back to Biff, a podcast where we talk about superhero TV and movies and other fine superhero related things. I'm Dan Morin, and I am joined by my partners in crime, John Moltz.
Dan, you're going to have to excuse me. I'm full of puffs.
Oh, this is going to be a good show. I can tell already. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
I'm a driving time bomb.
Cool. So we're tripping balls and we're a time bomb. Everything's right. Going to go fine. Mm-hmm. We are here to talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the most recent episode, which is Season 6, Episode 8, Collision Course, Part 1. In case you haven't picked it up, that's because there's a Part 2 next week. And this is an episode in which a lot happens, but John Moltz has assured me that he's condensed it down to the most salient details.
It is one of my shortest recaps ever, considering, you know, a bunch of stuff does happen.
All right.
You don't have to shame me, John. I'm right here.
You know what I did? I decided to take the notes with my phone. And I think that, because usually
will
I
make
type
everything shorter.
I watch on an iPad and type out on a computer, and I think having to type it on the phone makes you be like, I don't need to put that in.
Can I tell you point. Something?
Yeah.
I watch on my Apple TV and I type on my phone. And I type like thousands of words.
You're impressively good at that.
Maybe it doesn't work for everybody.
I watch on the Apple TV and I type on my iPad usually, but if I'm using like the on-screen keyboard, I definitely take way fewer notes.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, after some arguing with the crew, Fitz and Gemma jump their ramshackle ship back to Earth just outside the moon's orbit, and they start heading towards home. Mac sets Sarge off in his truck with Daisy, May, and Deke after some arguing, and it turns out Snowflake has takes a shine to Deke with some humorous results. Turns out Ezel is the strike leader. Well, I guess we'll talk about that. Mac takes their two remaining prisoners. The strike leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all agreed.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Sorry, I guess I misheard, and I wanted to be like,
Union. Mac takes the two remaining prisoners, who are, what is it, Jocko and
Pax.
I think I finally remember their name. They'll probably die in the next episode. on the Zephyr and follows Sarge from the air without letting him know. He's headed to where Sarge is headed to where the Shrike are meeting, and that's also where Ezel wants to set down the ship. The artifacts she's after are the monoliths. Ezel says Sarge wants to kill her because she knows what he really is. Meanwhile, she's assimilating the crew with Shrike. The Shrike on Earth arrive at the ley line convergence place that they're all going to and go all spiky and make a tower that Sarge says Ezel will use to destroy the Earth. He also says that he's going to kill her with a sword, but it turns out that's not true because he's got this bomb in the truck, and the bomb is big enough to take out an area of 200 square miles.
I like that he doesn't know what miles are, because no civilization should ever know what a mile is.
That's right. meters.
It's a cheap shot.
It's like a bigger kilometer.
You'll get no argument on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
He also says he's going. Oh yeah, wait. I'm sorry. Sarge's henchmen kill a guard and try to escape, but Yo-Yo locks them back up again. The henchman lets it spill that Sarge has the bomb, so they alert May and Daisy. Sarge puts the truck on auto drive though, and then escapes and teleports to the Zephyr. Deke finds out the bomb, but can he take it out in time? And then in the bumper, Enoch contacts another Chronicom and wants to organize the anthropologists. The hunters, meanwhile, say they still have Fitz and Gemma's brains and that the bad one is going in.
Oh, creepy. I want to point out, I started taking my notes here, and in my very first note, which is about Fitz and Simmons retrofitting the ship, in parentheses, I write, I'm already starting to think that Ezel is the Shrike creator.
Yeah.
They kind of telegraphed it a little bit with the... maybe it was something about the way the previously package was cut. But I was like... Yeah. And some of it was just economy of characters. I'm like, who have we met that we don't know anything about yet?
Right. You just got introduced to somebody. We're clearly pivoting into the end half of the season. I mean, come on. Who else is it going to be?
Right.
But not what I expected.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Not really. No, not what I expected either.
Like, I don't...
But she, you know, she first appeared early on, right, though? When they first went to... Well, she, when they first went to... what's the...
Kitson?
Kitson.
Kitson, yeah.
Did we see her that right? Early? I don't think we did.
I thought she was, like, trying to get a crew even then, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, we saw her in last week's episode, I think, was the first time we certainly had any length of time with her.
Yeah.
I'm going to double check, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Sorry.
I mean, yeah, it's live.
Raising questions I don't know the answer
to. We're doing it live! No, I think the last time we saw her, I think we've only seen her in last week's episode, according to IMDb credits, anyways.
Is that right? Okay. All right. See, that seems weird.
Yeah.
I agree.
Typically, Dan specifically, would you introduce a character so late in a story that carries that much weight?
It's
like you kind of want to seed it, right? Is what I feel like. Well, but I mean,
and the question is, how much are you seeding for, right? Like, I mean, if this is something where she showed up last week and next week they beat her and she dies, then yes, right. I agree, that's extremely brief. If that is the setup for something. As we've noted in the couple of weeks ago, S.H.I.E.L.D. really likes to do these sort of pivots in terms of how it treats its arc. So if she's being set up for something a little more in depth in the back half of the season, then I think that's fairly reasonable. And I can understand that even dropping her in for a brief scene or something earlier on, I think most of us wouldn't have remembered and it would have seemed very foreshadowy.
No. Well, she's striking. I would have recalled seeing her.
Right.
I mean, well, I recalled seeing the scraggly bearded guy that was dating Daisy for like all of 3 seconds. but so it is interesting. How many episodes do we have left? Like 8 something? No.
I think there are 13 in the total season. So 6 or 7.
Okay. So that kind of makes sense. If we're 8. Doing a sort of a classic 13. S.H.I.E.L.D. pivot. Yeah. Also, one thing that I felt telegraphed a new way of S.H.I.E.L.D. of being is when Mac and Coulson were negotiating about the team that they were going to take.
Right.
Like, Coulson is clearly asserting Sarge is clearly asserting some kind of leadership. Mac is pulling back on him. After the conclusion of this episode, it's not like that's going to be an ongoing struggle, because pretty much can't trust Sarge at all. But that little play, that little struggle, really made me think that, you know what, you could run a show like that. You really could.
Yeah, well, I mean, if John's foreshadowing is correct and we kill off the rest of Sarge's team, right, and Sarge has to get integrated into S.H.I.E.L.D. somehow, then that does provide some sort of conflict and tension.
Right. And he's seen some stuff, so that you don't have to do an edit there on many different worlds, and that can play into further seasons or at least episodes, because we know there's one season left, but that can play further into the setup for the show, right? Like, you can set up a next season being like, you know what, Sarge, Phil Coulson, knows all of this stuff about other worlds, and that may come into play, you know?
Right. Yeah, because he's
I feel like there's a good chance, though, that what Ezel is saying about him is true. She's sort of indicating that he's a liar.
Or that there's some other dimension to him that we don't see.
But he doesn't want anybody to know what it is, seemingly.
Well, he's very obviously cagey about talking about his past, right? Like, there's several comments this week where he refuses to talk anything about his past, which suggests that, something happened there, but we don't know what it is.
Even to his own guys. I do think that his natural charm lets us give him more leeway than he's maybe due. When he sees his name, what's his name? Pax?
Yeah.
mm-hmm. tied up in change and in chains, and he's like, "Why didn't we think of that?"
Yeah,
and I'm like, "That is actually a Phil Coulson style comment. That's actually pretty funny. You know, it's harmless. It's like, okay, this guy's clearly the loser on the team. Like, why didn't you know? We should have just chained him up. Would have been perfect." Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I feel like I wonder in some ways if there's a double bluff happening here too, where it's the Sarge being cagey about his past because he doesn't remember his past. Like, if you want to go with the he is Coulson or a clone of Coulson or something, then maybe he doesn't remember anything, but he's just sort of cagey about it to you know throw people off the center because he doesn't want to admit that he doesn't remember anything.
He's doing another Tahiti.
Yeah, I don't know. Or just maybe, you know, aliens stole his DNA.
It's Tahiti's all the way down. Yeah.
I was going to say that I think the I really like some of the scenes this week also with Gemma and Fitzy. And Gemma, to me, I think gets the MVP this week for being the, like, maybe let's not tell the stranger we just met all about these monoliths mm-hmm. that we have. right. As well as I love her conversation with Fitz about their wedding.
I loved it, too, because it finally explained, like, what my beef was. And he is being that petty.
And she points it out. She points out that she's jealous of himself.
Right. I know. It's like, you know what? I wasn't... Okay, first of all, whatever. If that relationship is solid, it's not like she was sleeping with anybody else. Even if she had, whatever, man. Get over it. Like, it's fine. He is being really, really... He's just broken. He is really broken. Like, that is not constructive at all. Like, and I what I particularly like about that is that, like, she's just more, much more sort of, I guess, mature or self-aware. And because when it pivots, when she's like, oh, yeah, the sex on our wedding night was amazing. Or wait, no, I can't, it'll be better with you or something like that. Like, she says something that, yeah, it's that it'll be better with you.
And he's like, what, it wasn't good?
I know, because he pivots immediately to owning like, the actions of the other guy. And it's like, this is just the dumbest thing.
Every single thing I say, you're going to twist somewhere.
Right. But I think even Fitz realizes I think there is some degree of self-realization there that he is being petty about it.
I do think so, but he's feeling it. And you know what? You can feel it and then explain it and be like, you know what? This is messing me up. Like, why don't you say that rather than just taking shots at your...
Because you got to create tension, guy.
Yeah, right.
It's going to
be okay. Well, that's a writer's excuse. That's a writer's excuse. My excuse is that is inside that character. That makes sense.
Yeah,
kind of immature and silly. And it fits and it works. And I think it's good writing. I'm just like, dude, man, you got to...
But
this is not.
But it will ultimately prove to be, I think, immaterial, essentially, right? Like, in the same way that when we did the episode in their heads, and you know they were yelling at each other, but like it was about how much they loved each other, right? Like, it's the same sort of thing where it's like, yes, we understand that we are in this like committed relationship and we love each other. It's not going to stop us from getting irked at each other.
Yeah, but you know how you're.
I wonder if they're drawing it out for another reason.
Maybe
is it like maybe there's this that lends some sort of explanation to Coulson? I'm trying to I just thought of that like a couple minutes ago and I was trying to go back in my mind. Is there a way that Coulson, that we could have two time trapped Coulsons? One of them died.
You think they did things on their wedding night that led to a different Coulson in an alternate reality? Because
I've done
a lot of stuff, but
never
something that creates an alternate reality.
Quick round trip to Conspiracy Corner. What if Sarge is Deke's grandson?
Whoa.
That does not help.
That would be...
That does not help
the situation
at all. Think
about it, John. Think about
that. That really would be kind of funny, I gotta say. So, I don't know. I like the writing. I think it's good. I think it's appropriate for the characters. I think that they are following through this insane situation in a way that treats the characters with respect. I would just like to see them... I mean, this goes back to Arrow, right? Like, stop lying to each other. How simple is that? You know, it's the same sort of vibe that I get here. It's like, just, you know what?
Who do you think is lying? I mean, it's possible that nobody's lying right now, right? Except for Sarge was lying about the bomb.
But he may not know his past.
Specifically,
I'm talking about Fitz and Gemma.
Yeah, but there's no lying happening.
Do you know how you ruin your wedding night? Is like, do that. Like, worry about the last time she got married to you. Like, what? Come on, man.
Write that down, Dan.
Right. Right. I don't know if
Note
Kat
to self.
Is,
don't worry about the last time she married you.
That's a problem. That's a problem everybody has to deal with at that point.
Yeah.
I swear to God,
if you need some brotherly love there, I will give you a stern talking to.
That's right.
Your wedding is coming up, and you shall not worry.
Who knows why these two should not be wed in holy matrimony?
Yeah.
Another Dan walks in.
Another Dan. Man, not again.
Yeah. Too many Dans.
That's my problem. That is definitely my problem. What do we think about, so John, you alluded in the recap to Deeks and Snow's relationship.
I don't know.
Wasn't much of a relationship. I mean, he's horny.
I mean, she
wants to get it on. So
I think, fine. I don't know her. I don't know what her deal is. I mean, she likes killing people.
But she also quickly sides with them when she realizes that Sarge has basically betrayed her.
Yep.
And she seems a little more, I don't say stable exactly, but like she seems to drop some of her frivolity act at that point, I feel like,
yeah,
where she's a little more serious about what's going on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I really did like that. It reminds me of, oh my God, I'm going to forget her name. Felicity's mom.
Oh, Donna.
Yeah, who acted flighty and goofy and was basically kind of a goof. But every now and then there'd be a scene where, you know, she was no babe in the woods. She knew stuff, and she could be wise and actually say interesting stuff. And that sort of transformation with Snow Bunny sort of gave me the same kind of feeling of like, oh wait, no, there's definitely more here. You're not just like a happy-go-lucky goofball
who
kills people.
I believe it's Snowflake.
Well, whatever makes so happy is in whatever spectrum makes you happy, and she happens to like stabbing stuff. But you know, more of a Harley. She felt like more of a Harley Quinn than character that had a bit more. Okay, Harley does have depth.
I think
you know what I mean. Like, you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah,
right?
I get it. I'm interested in I think Deke is a tricky character because you got to walk a really thin line with him, lest he be too irredeemably annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're flirting with that line just a little bit. Where every time he's about to kind of go over that edge, they pull him back a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do worry that at some point they may go over the line and just push that a little too far with him being essentially just whiny about everything.
Yeah, I do think it's a trick. It is an interesting choice to add him to the show tonally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does that do for you? It's clearly a choice. I mean, they hired him on for a second season.
Yeah.
But it does sort of add a weird, like a weird difficulty to the mix that I don't see an obvious benefit to.
Right. That's the question: is what is he accomplishing in the plot right now? He's kind of there. In some ways, he's there because with Fitz and Simmons not with the main cast, they need someone who's a little bit more technical, and he sort of fits that bill. But I agree with you. Like, we spent a lot of time with him in that episode about his company and everything, and you know, how is that important? Is there something about that that's going to come back around, or is that just sort of a fun diversion they wanted to do, and they had, you know, been renewed for two seasons, so they felt like we could just do it and get away with it?
Yeah. So
I mean, he's somewhat comic relief, although it's not really a show that it seems like most of them, you know, not necessarily May, can do a comedy bit here and there.
Sure. Yeah. It's not a show that needs a character devoted to that.
Right.
No, I mean, like, remember, was it last episode? The episode before when Mac fills in Daisy on.
Yeah, right.
It's like they've all got pretty good comic chops. At this point, I think they know each other. They've worked with each other so long. They can do a couple of takes and like know how to crack a joke and like make each other basically laugh or like have a like a natural moment, which is a hard learned skill. And, you know, but when you've been together for years, I think you can pull it off. I don't think you need a specific comic character. I really don't. And I've never liked him, but I've never hated him because he's a goof and whatever.
I liked him a little bit better at the tail end of last season than now, I think, just because he was a little bit more serious.
Well, and he was integrated in the plot, and he had kind of a through line, right? Like with wanting to go out and experience the world, and he does something heroic, etc. But yeah, I can't tell if this is all sort of the breadcrumbs for a setup or whether they are actually struggling with trying to figure out what his role is in the show. And right. I think we won't know until later in the season.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So
okay. That kind of ended. But you know what? It feels like this is something that our pal Lex Friedman would do much better than me. But the sponsor for this week is actually the TV show Arrow.
Sure, they never sponsored the Arrowcast. But.
Oh, I meant to mention this. Go ahead. You beat me. You did it.
I did it. I finally beat you. How many?
You're two steps ahead of me.
I feel like we're like 300 episodes in, and I feel like a 5-year-old boy that finally beat his papa at playing chess. I'm a 5-year-old Russian boy that finally beat his papa at playing chess, and I'm going to go on to be a grandmaster. Here's the thing. The sponsor is Truck Heist.
Oh, it's not what I was going to do.
But also, bomb spray? What you're going to do?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking at some point, I was like, oh, they could use some bomb spray.
So that's where the whole thing was like, wait a second. Are they just doing an amazing truck heist with somebody walking on top of a moving truck or the flying helicopter like filming all of this? I'm like, yeah, they're doing it. They're doing a truck heist better. And then it's all about bomb spray or diffusing a bomb. And I'm like, this is why Arrow, the TV show Arrow, has sponsored our podcast this week. And thank you very much, Beth Schwartz. I don't know why I'm naming people by name, but it's definitely have no association with any of this at all. I should not do that. I just happen to know that name. I'm wrong to do that. But thank you very much.
You're definitely wrong to call out a single person related to a show and then say something about them like, I don't know, maybe that they're tied up in your house.
Wait. Yeah. Whoa, no.
My point Berlanti. Being, that you've never only shied away Berlanti. From this before.
That was only ever Berlanti. Yes, that was only ever Berlanti. This is not applicable to anybody else. But anyway,
and
I
there
would
were
like
good
to,
reasons for that.
You're turning
there
over
very
a
good,
new
there
leaf,
were very
understand.
Good reasons for it. Anyway, thank you very much, Arrow, for sponsoring this episode of Biff. We loved your truck iced, and we loved the fact that, you know what? A little bit of bomb spray would have gone a long way.
That's true. That's true. It does. You just need a dab. Just a dab will do you. All right. Do we have any other thought? I felt like this episode, a lot happens in this episode. It's kind of moving the entire way through. It really doesn't feel like there's a lot of downtime in it.
No, it's. Yeah. I mean, it's literally rolling like a truck towards a target that we like. There's no stopping it. It is going full steam ahead. It's rough. You know, even the stuff that's happening in the plane is good. Man, we lost another shield thing.
I know.
Two.
Yeah. Two. Oh, yeah. That's right. One thing I like about this show is that there's enough shieldings that you can throw it, like, because you can give the bad, you can give
the
bad guys.
Days. I mean, we have some cannon fodder we can get.
Right. Like on Arrow, we know everybody so well that you can't actually kill people. Until you kill Captain Pike, which then I'm starting a letter writing campaign about that. Actually wrote letters. They probably haven't been delivered yet because, you know, mail. But I was upset about Pike. They often just have like, here's a fodder guy that can be used to give the pseudo bad guys some kind of weight or some kind of agency, or we can use to telegraph that they are different than our guys.
Yeah. It helps add some stakes, although the stakes are limited because we don't know them. But that guy gets like one good scene, maybe two good scenes before getting an ignominious death.
Yeah.
They also did an intro, like, so the way he got killed was the chain around the neck and all of that. Like, it was sort of an intricately shot scene. It was meant to convey that this guy who, Sarge and, what's his name? Dragon Man had been,
Jocko,
undercutting the whole thing, was actually a really dangerous guy.
Right.
You know, like, without that scene where he takes out that guy in such a really sort of good
way. It teases out the bomb. I mean, there's a reason.
Right.
Like, he's afraid to go closer to the whole thing that's happening, and it's not just because What's-Her-Face is coming. There's something else going on. Like,
right.
Right.
To Guy's point, it avoids making that guy our, comic relief character, too, right? Like, he is a threat in his own right.
Solely that. He's a bit of, he is the butt of some jokes.
He's definitely the minor guy, but even the minor guy might kill you with a chain.
Right.
You know? And it also gave us the way that, I'm going to forget her name. Speedy.
Yo-Yo? Come on, Yo-Yo. Guy.
Thank you.
Do your homework.
It's been a long weekend. The way that Yo-Yo
deals with them,
manages to take out both of them without even really trying. Like, she pushes him back at one point. She's like, oh, you're a really big guy.
She gets Pax no problem, and then she has to try twice on Jocko.
Yeah, but it's like, it's still not a problem. She just has to do it twice, which is awesome.
She was my runner-up for MVP this week.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Have you given your MVP?
Oh, yeah, it was Gemma. It was Gemma for not dishing on the monolith to the bad guy immediately.
Yeah. Okay, we should actually make that an actual segment.
It is. With the biff of the week. Biff of the week.
Biff of the week, yeah. I like how overloaded the term biff is. It just means everything to us.
Yeah, biff of the biff.
Is this a biff?
We're going to go to the biff page.
Right.
And do a little superhero biff.
Biff mobile. Anyway, do you want to do the ratings?
I'm good to do a rating, yes.
Dan, you go first.
Oh, I go first. This rarely happens. I give this episode a biff. A lot happens. It is, again, I think there's not a lot of downtime. The character moments are well drawn and efficient in sort of the way they dole out information and the way they give us pictures on various relationships. I think there were a couple genuine, not exactly twists, but like reveals that I thought were super clever. Like Jocko having the portal thing on the inside of his jacket. I actually thought that was really, really smart and made perfect sense, obviously.
If you have a portal, then you can put it on the inside of your jacket. That's exactly where you should
go. By the way, from our previous sponsor, Portal Spray.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Makers of bomb spray.
Yeah, makers.
It's kind of still like a bomb, but it's just like actually a very controlled bomb.
You know what? You could use Portal Spray on a bomb. Like, why would you not?
Oh, maybe that's how they're going to solve this problem.
Because you don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah, I could go on your plane.
I mean, do you care?
Well, I might not. I might.
I don't know. I don't know if Ollie does. I mean, he did skin a man alive.
let's try not to remember that. I think I'm intrigued to see where the second part of this episode goes. I kind of feel like they're building to something significant here in terms of the back half of the season. I felt like a lot of this season has been a really well executed puzzle in terms of like spelling out. We don't exactly know what's going on. Like, we feel very much in the same boat as our characters who are like,
yes,
okay, something's happening. We don't quite understand it. There's a mysterious dude who claims to understand it, and we're sort of piecing it together. And I am enjoying that because it doesn't feel, even though I sort of picked up on the Aizel thing fairly early in this episode, it doesn't feel super predictable and telegraphed for the most part. So I enjoyed this a lot. I thought it was well executed and exciting. I'm super looking forward to seeing how this pans out.
Right. But I mean, early in this episode is not early in, you know, it's not, it's, if you get telegraphed within 40 minutes of the reveal, I think they've done a good job of sort of.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not suggesting it was, obvious. I just, yes, I think they knew they couldn't sustain that for very long. I mean, they confirm it like 20 minutes into the episode, basically, that, right. You know, Sarge says, yep, they're a bad guy. Their leader's name is Izel. And like, by this point, we basically know what's happening.
Right. Well, I think she's singing to one of those little Shrike.
Yeah, that's right. Fairly early on. Yeah.
I think that might be earlier. But.
Right. So, you know, it's not like it's something. I was just ahead of it, I feel like, not like I figured it out episodes ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a biff. John,
what's your rating? Thank you, because I wanted John to go next.
I am giving it a biff as well. I feel a little bit like this one. I think maybe I'm slightly less enthusiastic than Dan. I feel like it reminds me of the first episode, but the first episode built really well into the second one, and so I'm hoping that that's what's going on here, since this is a two-parter, and so part of my feeling about this episode is just that it's, you know, it's not a complete arc because it's part one, part two. So I wish they had teased Izel out a little bit further, but maybe in one more episode. But I'm okay with it. I'm mostly okay with it because they've spent the whole season teasing Sarge, and so
right.
Yeah. My interest is completely maintained by that shoe waiting to drop.
Right. Guy. So I agree with both of you. I kind of do wish that tease this out a little bit, but I don't think I can make that judgment until I've seen the rest of the season. You know, I so far I've really trusted their choices, and I think they've been doing a great show. And if, you know, now is the time that they think that they should do this stuff, I'm on board. I haven't seen anything yet in this season that would make me doubt it. This episode, Biff is good. John Jr. is middling, and Alex is bad. I can go into great detail about this. You don't care. This episode is it's a Dan Marin.
What?
It's a Dan Marin. One of my favorite people. He's getting married this weekend, and I wanted to give him a shout out. I want this one to go down. It's just a Dan Marin.
For the last time, guy, I'm not sponsoring this podcast.
No, I know. Mostly because I never give you any money from the sponsors.
That's true. So I have no money to sponsor this podcast with.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean I never share any sponsorship money with either of you.
Oh, I know. That's I'm lucky I still have a microphone to record it, too.
Yeah. Well, maybe
those bomb spray people have deep pockets.
They do.
You would not believe how much Raytheon has.
It's the portal spray in the pockets makes them super deep. You just keep going. Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah. This episode is really good. I feel like it's rare to have a cliffhanger like that on Shield. Am I crazy? You guys have seen it more often than I
mean, they kind of do week to week. It's always like a little bit of a, like, let's build to a new reveal. But this
But this is like a best of both worlds style. Yeah,
it's clearly a two-parter.
Yeah. I'm rewatching season one. There's,
by the way, I finally got in my Star Trek crack.
Well done.
Yeah. Every week.
I am rewatching. Every week. He's doing it again. Never mind.
Yes, John.
In season one, there is the cliffhanger that has to do with Civil War. Or not Civil War, Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Basically, things start to go down at S.H.I.E.L.D., and so that's stretched out into...
And in that one, too,
at least two episodes, if not more.
I think that one also has... There might be a break in there, too, which is what we don't have this time, which I think is interesting. There's no, like, you know, it's a two-parter, and it's like, well, it's not like there it goes on hiatus for 2 weeks or something, right? And then we come back with the resolution, you know, we just jump into it next week. So that's also an interesting, I mean, it's running straight through this year,
right?
Because of the starting in the summer. which I think is good. I hate it when shows go off.
Yeah, me too.
It's just annoying to have to deal with, especially when you do a podcast about them and you're like, I guess I don't need to do a podcast this week. I think that was an interesting move on their part, but I think that's again why I'm saying I feel like there's a lot of weight on these two episodes, because clearly it is sort of it's mid season, but also kind of late in the season. So it's an interesting choice.
Yeah. It seems like if it had been like, this would be mid season,
right?
Like a break and that you'd be like pissed off for 4 weeks.
But there's only, since we just talked about it, like it's a 13 episode season. Next week is episode 9. So after these two parter, there's only 4 episodes afterwards. So if there's like a different arc, it is a lot smaller.
Well, you've got to roll. I think this happens and then you roll. And I think, so they were given 2 seasons, right?
Yeah, they have a season 7 on the books already.
My guess is that they know what season 8 is going to be. Or, sorry, season 7 is going to be.
Yeah, agreed.
I think this is going to somehow end up in a sort of calamity that rolls right into the next season. I think we will get like sort of a cliffhanger at the end of this season about like what the setup will be next season.
Yeah, I will say, just for clarity, looking at Wikipedia claims that they have already started filming the 7th season, started in February.
And it makes sense because it's in the fall.
Yeah, they said it's going to air in 2019/2020, so it will air again before the end of the year.
Right.
Which will be interesting for us, because we all might have multiple active shows.
Well, we'll figure something out. Whatever. Yeah. So the sweep segment will turn into be one or the other show, depending on which one was more biffy.
There you go.
I don't know.
30-second recaps.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I think unless you guys have something else you want to say about this week's episode, we can probably...
it was great. I'm looking forward to the next one. To be perfectly honest, I spent more time paying attention to Arrow while we were doing Arrow, and now that I kind of need to pay more attention to S.H.I.E.L.D., John, and I think, Dan, I think you've also said the same thing on the show. This is just a better show.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, certainly production-wise, they got a lot more money.
I really think so.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of reasons for it, but yeah, go.
In the first season, there are so many shots that are in, like, other cities in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And and I can't tell if they're like, some of them are definitely, I mean, like, just like Ward gets lifted off from a roof in Paris, and he's definitely in that, Paris in that shot.
That is 100%. Yeah, I know. And that's early.
And then they do another thing in Sweden, which I can't completely tell if it's just like a lot of clever signage and stuff like that. It seems like it might have actually been shot in Sweden, but I don't know.
They have a lot more money than the CW does. That's very clear. Yeah. If you watch some of the other stuff, like, we were watching the rather short-lived, sadly, show Whiskey Cavalier, which is also an ABC show.
Oh, man, we've got to talk about that. We need to find a week with no news, but I want to talk to you about it.
But that show was, I think they were based out of Prague, so they got away with filming not only in Prague as a location, but, you know, sort of generically in Europe, using a lot of, again, clever, like, repurposing of stuff. But it looked great. And like, because there really is no excuse for shooting on, like, there's no replacement for shooting on location when you have to do that. Alias always did a nice job with that too, I feel like, also an ABC show. Like, you know, they kind of, you can kind of tell when shows actually have the budget for that kind of thing.
And to, you know, to be fair, their budget has clearly dropped off, because, you know, the in the first episode this year, there was supposed to be like Indiana or something, and it's like Sacramento, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you don't get that kind of budget forever unless your show is wildly successful.
That's the way it works. Right.
All right. Let us wrap this up and let us move on to some superhero sweep. I think we're a little light on superhero sweep topics this week. There's not that much going on. I will say, just to sort of put a pin in something, that Comic-Con is on the horizon. It's not next. It's like just under 2 weeks away. And I fully expect to hear some stuff coming out of that about...
Well, the thing that I'm trying to figure out, want to know more about, is Phase 4 So two of us have seen Spider-Man, which is the end of Spider-Man Home, Far From Home, which is the end of Marvel's Phase 3.
Yeah, the better two-thirds of the podcast.
Next year. Phase 4 starts next year sometime. They've released the dates of these movies.
Right, but not what any of them
are. So the first one's in May, I believe, but not, is this not like, the names of which movies are coming out.
Is this the longest that we have gone without an MCU movie since the MCU started? It's got to be close, right? That's like from July to May. That's 10 months. Like, I think that might be the longest stretch.
When did Infinity War come out last year?
Infinity War came out in April, but we had,
so then it was April to March, right? Because wasn't that when Captain Marvel came out?
Was there nothing? Yeah. Was there nothing in between those two at that point?
There was. So it was Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so you had, that's not quite the same. That's July to March, so close. But even in the early ones, I guess that's not true. The longest gap, it looks like, is actually Incredible Hulk to Iron Man 2, because that was almost 2 years. Surprisingly. Wow. Yeah, I know.
God, that seems crazy.
Well, they didn't know.
It was completely different back then. I realize
right,
that. I mean,
didn't know
you think about the
doing.
Time it took between Star Wars movies back in the 70s.
It was 3 years between
76 and then 80.
Yeah, yeah. So
77, John.
77. Yeah,
yeah. So
Jackass.
I knew it after I said
I was exaggerating. Whatever. Just move.
And Avengers to Iron Man 3 was also a just almost exactly a year. So it seems like they tend to take about a year break or 10 month break between the end of phases too.
Because
Avengers to Iron Man 3, which was Phase 1 to Phase 2, was about a year. And Ant-Man to Civil War was 10 months as well, July to May.
But we will get some TV shows in the fall, right?
Yes, we will. We'll get Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think the
Loki?
WandaVision.
I think Loki.
And Loki, all three of those, I think, are coming in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was intrigued once again watching. I saw Endgame again for the second time this past weekend because it was super hot in Boston and I decided, 3 hours in a movie theater. That sounds pretty great. And that was only the second time I'd seen it. And, you know, I saw it on like opening weekend. So it's been a little while and I really enjoyed it again. I think, you know, I watch for a lot more things since I know what's coming every time. One thing that I did catch this time that I missed, and also, even though I've listened to the soundtrack a bunch, it's not reflected in the soundtrack album, is that they actually do use, there are some other themes that get woven in there, which is not something the Marvel Universe is necessarily great about in its scores, but Captain Marvel's theme in particular does come into play when she shows up to bust out Thanos' ship in the last act, and it's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's a nice moment there, and I felt like, oh, I'm glad that they used the musical cues from Captain Marvel, because it feels
did appropriate. Did you see Howard the Duck?
Oh, I did not. He's in the portal scene?
He appears.
Yeah, he's in the scene. Yeah, like right when Wasp appears.
There's so much going on.
For the first time. Yeah,
that movie's getting lower middle right kind of thing.
I can't wait to get it, you know, because I'm going to go through a lot of that very slowly.
Yeah,
I'm such a nerd.
The thing that makes me incredibly happy about that movie is it feels like it. This is the thing I loved about comic books and series in general. Is stuff that rewards you for watching. And I know a lot of people sort of decry the whole Easter egg thing, but like, I always feel really happy when something like that shows up and it references things. And for me, I love, for example, the scene in Endgame where, you know, Wasp and Ant-Man have to go start up the van or whatever. And Hope says like, we're on it, Cap. And like Paul Rudd gives her a look, right? Cause they had a whole joke about that in Ant-Man versus in the Wasp. And you're like,
There's a mess of those. There's so many lines in that movie that are like references back to something that happened previously in the Marvel Universe. Because like that when Tony meets his father and he's talking about his father to his father, he says he did his best. And that's the thing that he says in that simulation.
Yeah.
He said, I know you did your best.
Yeah. There's
because that's the thing that he wanted to tell him, but had never said.
Right. And,
Sam, you know, such a good character moment, but
yeah, like, there's a lot of those.
It's paid off so well. Yeah.
Sam's, I love Sam's on your left when they show up.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh like, my God.
With your soldier reference.
Yeah. That one gave me a little bit of the chills.
Yep,
the first
time.
I'm like, oh God, that's amazing.
Well, that one
in cap on your left.
Oh, yeah, that one in I do the moment that is the standout moment of this movie for me is never not going to be the cap summoning Mjolnir, like, because such a, like, you know, you got like the chills, the tear up thing, and you're just like, oh my God, and then Thor's like, I knew it, you know, like it's just so good, it's so good. So it definitely still found it delightful. Spent a little more time in my head trying to work through all the time travel, and you know, there's still some inconsistencies there, but you know, some of it is also just maybe they have a plan to explain that, maybe they don't.
I think it all holds together well enough. I mean, I don't
find
any. It raises some questions, but then none of them I think are unsolvable,
and nor do any of them really matter. Like,
yeah,
you know, for me the character beats are the important part, and the fact that that you know Steve gets to go back and be with Peggy is more important than how did he get back afterwards.
Yeah, who cares? I've stopped caring about that. And so as the summoning Mjolnir thing, I went to go see it with a couple of coworkers or a coworker one of the last days it was in the theater. And so we're sitting there, we're watching it, and when Cap summons Mjolnir and it flies past, because you think it's Thor summoning it, right?
Right.
Like the way it like sort of shakes and picks up, you're like, okay, Thor's going to bonk him on the back of the head somehow with Mjolnir. And then it lands up in Cap's head and he just goes to town on Thanos. It's amazing. So she was sitting next to me, she basically punched me in the arm really hard. She's like, yeah.
I think I yelled yes in the first time I saw it.
Yeah, like I knew it was coming, like, because I'd seen it before. Like it was a hard punch, and she's like, oh man, like she's apologized for it since, and she's like, I'm really sorry I hit you so hard. I'm like, you know what, that if I'd known the person next to me when I saw it the first time, they would have got a black eye, because that, like, I was like, yeah, that is amazing. That is the killer shot of that movie.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So good. Yeah. Absolutely.
I love how at ease he is. He's like instantly basically knows how to use it. I mean, like, it's something that he thought of before, I'm sure.
It's like, oh yeah, if I had Mjolnir, what would I do?
He does all these little fake outs with him too. He throws the shield at him, and he like flicks the shield away, and then he throws Mjolnir at the shield.
Yeah.
And like goes bong, and then, you know, somehow manages to get both of them back, and then he throws the shield at him again or something like that, and then he like uses Mjolnir to hit the shield back at him. It's like,
yeah. Well, and several of those
got all of these little moves planned out.
Several of those things are callbacks to the original Avengers movie too, right? Because like they have that fight with Cap and Iron Man and
mm-hmm.
Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
he has, you know, Tony has Thor shoot him with lightning at one point, which is a direct reference
when he supercharges
him. And you know, the hammer versus the shield thing, I think they use a few times in different.
Yeah, they do all the combinations, like they're playing a 2-on-2 in like some Marvel fighting game,
Mortal Kombat,
like a Capcom fighting game. Like it is crazy. And the fact that Cap knows how to use both of them, I love it, because it's not really explored in the movies, but like the notion is that Cap is he's a super soldier, and he's always going to figure out all the tactics. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to review those fights.
Right.
He's going to know exactly what that hammer can do with that shield, and he's going to just use it. And I love it. It's so great. I also love that he ultimately fails, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, yeah. But it's I particularly love also that we see there's so much evolution of his character there, and that you get to see it when you're put up against the Avengers era Cap versus the Endgame era Cap. And just like that, I mean, the fight, they're very evenly matched, but also just the fact that Steve has become so much more comfortable with where he is, mm-hmm. and he's just mm-hmm. like, first of all, he gets to swear, second of all, he's not above the just like
just
totally lying to him about, or not lying to him, like, you know, telling him, like,
playing him,
Bucky's alive. And he's like, I know that will screw him up, right? Like,
right.
Or using the Hail Hydra thing, right? Like, all of those are great moments where it's like, Steve from the Avengers would not do that. But Steve from several years later definitely would.
Well, I mean, it's a little telegraphed, even when he just comes out and he sees him on the bridge, I guess, the walkway.
Right.
And he's like, you've got to be... Okay, forgive me.
You've
got to be shitting me. Well, what? Come on, they used it in the... Okay, whatever.
It's fine.
Earn you keep. Just earn you keep.
Just put a note.
Or I'll do it for you.
I got it.
That is one of the greatest moments, I feel. It's that, like, you know, in the previous Avengers movie, that they were giving him... They were giving him grief for, you know, like the fact that he kept calling other people out for that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're finally faced with yourself and you're like, oh, God, I really don't want to deal with this guy. I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't want to deal with myself from like 4 years previously either. Oh, yeah. I think that would be horrible. I really do. And my favorite part of that fight is when the younger Cap says, I could do this all day.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And the old day is like, yeah, I know. And he's just like, so like, God, I do not like you. Why would I ever have been you? And it's great.
Yeah, no.
I mean, he could definitely still do it all day, but he's like, yeah, I know. You don't need to tell me.
You're a little too on brand, man. Come on. Yeah, like, tone it down. Yeah.
Well, you're still being the 50s, like, iconic postage stamp kind of hero, right?
Right.
And the Cap that we've got certainly after Winter Soldier, is not
There's a microcosm of that, too, in the when they first come back to New York and they see the Hulk running around smashing things, and then they make Bruce, come on, you know, smash a few things along the way, and he's just, like, half-heartedly kicking the taxi cab, right? Yeah. Like, same thing, right? He's, like, he's talking about how embarrassing it is. So you all of these characters, right? I mean, Tony, all of these characters have grown. Nat, I mean, all of, like, significantly changed.
Yeah, they've all arced enough. I think we discussed it. I don't like what they did with Nat. But as for Bruce, I would have liked to see his Hulk smash more. He didn't... I don't even recall, like, a scene of him just doing crazy Hulk stuff. You know, like the Avengers 1 basically ended with, or it introduced the end scene with, we've got a Hulk. And then by this one, it was like, well, whatever. He's just one of a million guys on the battlefield.
Yeah,
he doesn't actually do anything useful, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he does, but it's nothing spectacular.
No, but well, I mean,
and so some to of me, that,
the only he thing fights, Hulk, he fights, but he, and he, but well, and he does, yeah, he puts on the glove.
That's
too.
The thing is, like, he puts on the glove, which is the thing that requires both his Hulk side and his Banner side to be able to do.
Right. That's true. That's
so that's
true.
Again about just, his arc.
Just in the is maybe just part in, of the point, right?
I think it is. It's the arc of him coming to terms with his dual personality. Right? Is the whole thing with him is that he's merged these two sides of him rather than
so
trying to suppress.
I agree. I would also like to see him just Hulk jump up to like one of those ships and just tear it apart like it was a helicopter.
I have a feeling. Like, I have a feeling there might be like that might have happened and we missed it because it happened in the background.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on in the background where there's like 400 people.
Just the Hulk is just murdering people left, right, and center. It's like, maybe. Yeah.
Definitely possible.
Anyway, just like here's the thing. I've got a soft spot for the Hulk. I like how basic that character is. It's Jekyll and Hyde with Hyde being effectively a good person who has very, very, very poor communication skills. So I like it. And I liked it in what they've done with him in the Avengers movies, certainly more than what they did with him in the Hulk movies. And I just felt like, you know what? I would have liked to see one more Hulk smash moment. That you could feel it, that there was like, holy cow, that is insane. What just happened? But
Avengers is the first time they got him right.
Yes, definitely.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. I need to go
and
back.
I felt like I wanted just a little bit more, but
yeah,
always leave him wanting more, guy.
That's right.
That's what you do.
It's not dead, actually. So, you know, maybe we'll get.
Yeah, he might come back.
Yeah.
Any other things you guys want to discuss for our Superheroes Week segment? I know Guy put in a note about my watching Cheers, which I've been doing.
Yeah, we really should watch that. There was another thing that I thought we wanted to... Did we agree to talk about something that wasn't really a superhero thing?
No. Quite possibly.
No, we've never done that.
Doesn't sound like us.
No, there really was. There was something that we kind of convinced ourselves that was like not a superhero thing. But it's, I didn't put it in the
So it doesn't exist if it's not in the notes.
That's true.
It's probably in a Slack somewhere.
Yeah, we haven't discussed. Actually, there were a couple things, little things that we did text about. For example, John, you pointed out that our favorite one of our favorite Shieldlings, Davis, appears in a season one episode in a bit part.
Yep,
as a Shieldling,
he just walks up. I mean, it's him. I mean, assuming it's him. I mean, we can just say that it's him, but he's not identified in any way. And he comes up and just says, you know, like Fitz tells him something and he says, yes, sir. And then he walks off and he's incredibly stiff, but it's Davis. And then he's not on the show again for like three more years.
Yeah.
I really, really admire that. That's that's some kind of Star Trek level of like reusing actors.
He is credited as Agent Davis in that episode.
Yeah. So, really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess, I mean, whatever. I guess the
Which,
writer.
I mean,
wrote,
they may have done
the writer write down a name, and it's just like.
Right. I mean, yeah. Or they may have created at the time, just like, just give this guy a name, Davis.
He's gonna, he's going to have a name. Like, right. Yeah. So it's like, okay, fine. Let's just take him.
Well, my favorite trivia about that always, or my favorite related trivia is that Piper, as I pointed out to you guys, I think, was also in the DEO at the same time over on Supergirl.
Yeah.
I love that she's like. Super she's secret agencies.
She's in all the secret agencies.
She's moonlighting. Yeah. She's like, I don't make enough from S.H.I.E.L.D. I got a moonlight over at the DEO.
Well, I don't know if you guys recall.
It's a transferable skill set is all I'm saying.
Well, I don't know if you guys recall, but we made because I actually remember to write down a note about this. We made a Piper award for anybody that crosses universes. they get a Piper award.
Did we make that?
It seems possible. That seems like
something. Or was that in another universe?
Here's the thing. I know we said it because I wrote down a note that we said it.
Okay.
I've also got. By the way, I've now received the Bible for time traveling.
Oh my god! You will not. Oh my god! Oh my god! This is amazing. I just looked up because I thought I have a notepad here someplace where I write stuff down, and I looked over the notepad, and you know what it says? It says Piper, and there's an arrow that says crossover award.
Right? Right?
Okay, so I'm guessing that we did.
There's
say
some crazy time travel stuff happening.
Do you know what? Do you know why I wrote it down? Because you said you wrote it down, and none of us believed you. None of us believed you. It just felt like, okay, whatever. Chuck's just saying that. It's like, he's obviously lying. But thanks, man. I'm glad you got my back. So we have an official Piper Award.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes out for that one.
Oh my god, that is hilarious.
That is that's almost Biff Conklin level of when I found out Biff Conklin was a real character.
I'm questioning you and it's right in front of me.
All right, anything else you guys want to discuss before we
I think we're I think we've been dumb enough for this week. I think we may want to say that next week I will probably be off by at least a day or two.
Oh yeah,
that seems
and then some.
Not unlikely.
Our pal Dan, not related to this one, is getting married, and John and I have to attend the wedding. So
I need a promise that no alternate dimension Nazis show up at this thing, because
we cannot promise that.
Ah, damn it. All right,
then. I will say this. If alternate universe Nazis show up, Piper will also show up.
I was going to say, John, just remember to pack your bow. And Guy, pack the ring with my in it.
Stupid snap-out bow.
Yeah.
I do like that John got the bow and that I got the underwear that doesn't burn when you run too fast.
That seems appropriate.
Because that's the joke I would have made, too. Give John the bow.
And wear those skirts that you can rip easily so that you can kick people's asses.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Those are amazing. That was great. Yeah, me too.
Smart.
It's freeing. It's hot in the summer these days, you know?
Well, we do not have any letters this week, so this is your reminder that if you want us to answer your letters on the show, that you can hit us up at BiffCast on Twitter or send us an email at biff@theincomparable.com. If you got questions or topics you'd like us to discuss, or thoughts, conspiracies, anything you want, let us know. We will probably talk about it. And that's it for this week. We will be back next week to talk about season 6, episode 9, Collision Course, part 2. But until then, I just want to thank my co-host, Guy English. Thanks for being here.
Bomb spray, man. Just a little bit of bomb spray.
It works as a breath freshener too, just so you know.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's multi-purpose. Yeah, yeah. And it's
actually, if you spit that in your mouth, it makes your jokes better too. You don't bomb. God, that is the most tortured joke ever.
Mm, yeah.
I think, you know what? Turns out it works in the opposite. It works opposite. Right, yeah. It really works the opposite.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. John Maltz, thank you for being here.
I'll see you Friday.
Threatening.
Yeah.
It's vaguely threatening.
I will see you Friday. Man, I cannot believe that.
Very
also exciting. Do you know what? I love that you are stating it in an assertive way that you will actually see us on Friday. That love it, man.
Well, we will sadly not see all of you on Friday, but we will see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. As always, we appreciate your support. We'll see you next time.